This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. So earlier this month, writer and podcaster Whitney Reynolds ignited a Twitter storm when she challenged her Twitter followers to describe yourself like a male author would. The thousands of responses which came through are both hilarious and cringeworthy and have highlighted the tendency of male authors to focus on the physical appearance of female characters. Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Gunnison, my two favourite feminists, weigh in on the discussion while also discussing female representation in the media as a whole. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
We're good, thank you.
Good. Not too angry, some might say.
Well, then we're off to a good start. So just to give some context, an author and artist, Gwen Katz, she actually recently tweeted, well, this was earlier this month, about an unnamed writer who was insisting that he was living proof that it's possible for a male author to write an authentic female protagonist. I'm sure you both read that. But just for everyone else, this is a snippet of that writer's work right on the first page. I sauntered over, certain he noticed me. I'm hard to miss, I'd like to think. A little tall, but not too tall. A nice set of curves, if I do say so myself. Pants so impossibly tight that if I had a credit card in my back pocket, you could read the expiration date. The rest of my outfit wasn't that remarkable, just a few old things I had lying around. You know how it is. I've never described myself like that. I don't know about you, ladies.
I've never thought of myself like that. Never mind described
really?
Myself.
Really? You never think of your backside being poured into jeans?
Oh, as my
you
credit card.
Yeah.
Dangerously. Because you're empowered, exposed. By the way. You have a credit card. So you're empowered, but your jeans are so tight, the expiration date can be seen on it.
It's, I don't know. I mean, I think the main thing that jumps out at me from that description is that women are not allowed to be too much. I think that that's the thing. If you're too much of something, if you're too beautiful, that means that you're automatically the femme fatale in the book. Or there's this notion that every woman needs to be pretty, but not too pretty. You know, sexy, but not too sexy. Your jeans can be tight, but the rest of your outfit is unremarkable. It's a strange kind of balance that you need to strike. I don't know.
I mean, that also goes back to this idea of the woman mostly exists within the book space, books written by men primarily, to serve some sort of function. So if she's a mother, she's either a sexy mom that the author or the male character might want to sleep with, or she's an unremarkable mother who's not kept up with her appearances and, you know, is described as such.
If she's a nag.
So it's always in terms of what function would that woman and her body serve for the male. And that's why I think these descriptions become so prevalent, because they're never actually thought of as characters that exist in their own right.
I mean, now, you know, when this whole thing started, did you kind of go back and read some of the old, you know, books that you've read before and kind of like maybe analyze it slightly differently and see whether, you know, even authors who you thought were so wonderful, I'm talking about male authors here, actually also use that, go back to that same sort of, well, what do you want to call it, handicap of, you know, describing women's breasts all the time and how their butt looked and things like that?
You know, the thing is, I do think that over the last few years, this has been something that has dawned on me more and more. But definitely as I was younger, and also because primarily a lot of the books that we're raised with were by male authors, I don't think I realized that these were problems. And in many ways, I think I had even internalized these. Mm-hmm. And I remember that as a teenager, maybe in my early 20s, when I started writing, there was an overwhelming tendency to even describe female characters in this way, because that's what you think you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And that's what good writing is. And it's only now that I realize when I look back at some authors that I still like. I mean, it doesn't mean that their work isn't good. But yeah, I can see these now. And I think about why are these characters represented like this? And why has it taken me so long to see it this way?
I completely agree with that point about having internalized it, because I grew up reading a lot, and I probably read consistently ahead of my age because my parents weren't very good at monitoring what I was reading. So, you know, at 12, I was reading probably books that were meant for adults, which was good for many reasons, but bad in some very specific ways, one of which is that I used to always wonder what female characters looked like. Mm-hmm. And it never occurred to me that you know, hearing somebody described with a one-word descriptor as handsome or tall would be insufficient for a female character, except that when she arrives on the scene, you want to know what color her eyes are. For some reason, you want to know what she looks like. And because I think you eventually figure out as a reader that, you know, maybe on a subliminal level, you're supposed to figure out how you feel about the character based on how the author has described her. Mm-hmm. For instance, I grew up on the Sweet Valley High novels. I think everybody did.
I was just thinking of Sweet Valley High.
And you have this very hyper-specific description of these two girls. They were size 6.
Yep. Blue-green eyes.
Blue-green eyes.
Which was their trademark.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, maybe their hair was a little bit different, but always blonde. You know, they were beautiful. The beautiful Wakefield twins. And then you've got their friend Lila, who was, you know, the brunette, who was kind of snobby.
It's all coming back to me.
That's the thing.
And brunette wasn't the hero, of course.
Brunette was not the hero. Yeah, she was always kind of a bit jealous of the Wakefield twins, always trying to win them from their mutual boyfriend. No, Elizabeth's boyfriend. Bruce? Yeah. So, I don't know. There are just all these things, right, that I think reading those books and then graduating to more adult books, where people were always described in terms of their physical traits. And by people, I mean mostly women. Mm-hmm. You don't notice that that happens. You know, I have started to notice it more in recent years. But I have to say that the article that this was based on, it kind of threw me. It made me, you know, kind of review my reading habits. Because I am conscious of trying to have that split between male and female authors, primarily because I grew up so heavily relying on male authors, which is another thing you don't realize.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking that that idea of describing women so specifically, it's very similar to what you see in film, right? Like when a female character walks into the scene and the camera sort of pans up and down in a slow-mo sort of, that's exactly the literary equivalent, because it's the appearance that is at that point, the appearance takes the foremost importance. You don't see that being done to male characters most of the time when they walk on screen, unless it's for a very, very specific reason.
They get action shots, usually. Men are, you know, shown at their work, whether it's Indiana Jones kind of teaching or running away from a rock in a cave. Yeah. You know, women, on the other hand, get you show up screaming.
The Ursula Andress coming out of the water in the bikini.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we got that with Daniel Craig. Eventually. But I
don't
know.
Decades later.
Yes, exactly.
So would you say that, you know, in all of these sort of contexts, women kind of exist as objects to be seen and to be done to, you know, rather than as active agents in their own right?
I think that is true of some books. For instance, I'm going to wager that that anonymous male author who wrote that fabulous description, he would probably fall into that category. But I can think of some books in which women were described that way, and then they go on to do things. They go on to be characters. They go on to be like integral parts of the story. But there are, of course, also situations where you are nothing more than a romantic foil. You know, the other author that was really huge to me in my formative years was Stephen King. Again, my parents not paying attention.
we have very similar experiences. I was reading King at 11 or 12 when it was highly inappropriate.
Me
at that
too.
Age.
And then The Godfather, also highly inappropriate.
This explains so much about the both of you.
Yeah, you know, united wondrous, at last.
Wondrous beings that you are.
No, but really, like with Stephen King, for example, his female characters, I think, are by and large pretty good. They, and again, you wouldn't necessarily think so for somebody working within the horror genre, which is not known for being that fantastic. You know, you've got the last girl standing trope, you've got things like that. But Stephen King's characters, he does focus, he does dwell on appearance, especially in the one I'm thinking of is not one of his best, but Bag of Bones.
Yes.
He dwells a lot on. And he sexualizes a rather young character, and he makes a point of saying, you know, she's young. But I think that's a part of the story. Whether you find that excusable or not is another thing. But she was important. She mattered. She made decisions. She had agency. And I think in that sense, I find it less egregious.
Okay.
You know, because maybe you just, for whatever reason, you're stuck in this pattern of over-describing women. But if they go on to have their own story, it's not so bad, I think.
Yeah, when I thought about authors that I had read or I liked within the context of this Twitter storm that arose, Stephen King was actually one of the first authors that came to mind because he's one of my favorite authors, but he's a genre author, right? So he's not really considered in the same literary circles as a Hemingway or a Michael Chabon. But like Lynn said, I actually think Stephen King does a pretty good job writing women, within which I don't really feel like he sexualizes them to a point that it's not necessary. And in a weird way, that I think you find examples like that more in genre books. For instance, young adults, because the young adult audience tends to be viewed as female. So someone like John Green, who's a man who writes young adult novels, his Fault in Our Stars, it's about a woman. It's about a girl. And I thought it was written very well. I thought for a man to write about a female character with so much sensitivity. So it's entirely possible, right? And I wonder why it is that somehow when it comes to more literary books, this seems as if it's less prevalent.
I wonder whether it's in an attempt to write a more well-rounded character, and in that way you almost overcompensate.
Yeah, because genre is about story and moving the plot forward usually, where else, arguably, right?
No, I agree with you. I think my face was at the unkind thought that perhaps the thing about literary fiction, especially literary fiction written by capital V, capital I, very important male writers, is that it tends to focus on the journey of the male character. I'm thinking here of people like Jonathan Franzen, who...
This is white male.
Who is really, whether fairly or unfairly, kind of held up as the emblematic white male writer. Mm-hmm. And that's because his writing, while good, I'm not hating on his writing. I enjoy Jonathan Franzen, and then I have to take a break from him, but I enjoy him. He is very deeply focused on this sort of meandering story of one white man's wanderings and mullings and mistakes through the world. And so women kind of enter the picture as and when to complicate or to simplify, but that's all they do. So they get to be very sexy complicators or very simple complicators. Like, but that's the point. That's what they serve. Whereas, I suppose, as you say, with genre writing, it's more interested in moving the plot forward.
In plot, yeah. Yes. And in something like a Stephen King, his male characters are not or aren't necessarily his proxies in that world. They are a character.
Except for that time, remember, when they all had urinary tract infections.
Oh, yeah.
What? No, there was a time. There was a time in, I think, the 90s where every single one of his characters had trouble peeing. And I think it coincided with the height of his drug use when he was having that problem himself. No, I think he's written about this.
Yes, I actually remember this.
I did not know that.
Yeah. It was before my days of ever even understanding what a urinary tract infection was. So I have a very distinct memory of his descriptions of that experience. Yeah. Such as it is. Sorry, you were saying before I rudely interrupted with my
UTIs.
Yeah.
So in terms of genre fiction, it doesn't feel so necessary to have that interiority. Mm. Where else in a lot of literary fiction written by men, yes, these men aren't necessarily just rewriting themselves in different forms, but in a certain way, it almost also feels like they are, that their male characters' viewpoints, view of the world are their own or are the way they look at the world. And so these women who sort of flit in and out also is indicative of their own experience of the world and the roles women have served in their lives.
I don't want to make this only about whether you are a good husband or not, mm-hmm. but I do want to point out the fact that Stephen King writes for his wife. And I think that that makes a difference because he addresses her. He has his dear constant reader kind of letter at the start of most books. And he has spoken many, many times about how his very, very first reader is his wife. Mm-hmm. And he's been edited by women a lot through his career. And I think that impacts you. You know, when you have women in your actual life who play an actual role in your writing, who influence it directly, then that changes, I think, how much or how little you can just make them sex dolls. Because, for example, we can talk about other authors, but Stephen King writes marriage very beautifully, I think.
Yeah. Well, versus, say, someone like Hemingway, whose personal struggles with women and infidelity and the way he viewed women and treated women, you can see that in his prose. Maybe not overtly everywhere, but there's a certain
dismissal,
that's the word, disregard, dismissal of women and their roles within the story, which I think is absolutely reflective of the way he saw women in real life.
I think another example of this, and he's one of my favorite writers, I love him, but W. Somerset Maugham is problematic in the extreme, you know. I loved Of Human Bondage when I read it the first time. You know, up until recently, it would have made it into my list of Desert Island books. I don't know why. It's really not one to reread. But he...
Depends on the Desert Island.
Yeah, true. Depends on the level of
what
excruciating.
Yeah.
But I think he has also very, very problematic attitudes towards women and very problematic attitudes towards women and sex in particular. I think it's if you look at Mildred in Of Human Bondage, she's an awful character. You know, she is a shrew. She is promiscuous. She basically is, spoiler alert, probably headed to its death due to promiscuity and prostitution.
Of course.
Yeah, and it's all just, so you introduce this female character designed to torture the male character, and then once you're done with her, you kill her off, you know? And that's his most famous book. That's probably his magnum opus, and that's where we are with that. So I think it really a lot, I don't want to make everything about the author, but I do think often it your attitudes in life end up reflected on the page.
I'm just curious, was there any sort of backstory to her, to Somerset Maugham's character?
She was a heart-scrabbling waitress who was just kind of trying to make her way in the world, who, you know, someone happened to, you know, women, making people fall in love with them and then refusing to love them back, you know, these dastardly women. It was basically that. I mean, I'm not saying she is a good person. I really wouldn't go that far as to describe her as a good person. But I don't think, you know, of all the imperfect characters you could have, you don't necessarily need to, like, throw this one in the river and see if she floats.
I'm speaking today to Lee Chee Lin and Sharmila Gunnison. They're both, well, how do I describe you?
Readers?
They're both avid readers. And we're actually discussing a Twitter storm that emerged earlier this month, which was describe yourself like a male author would. We'll continue this discussion after this quick break. You are listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. In the studio with me today are Lee Chee Lin and Sharmila Gunnison. They are both, well, feminists. It's how I like to describe them, but they're also avid readers. And we are discussing a Twitter storm that kind of erupted earlier this month. A lady called Whitney Reynolds, she kind of asked people, challenged her followers to describe yourself like a male author would, and the results were quite horrifying. So, okay, so both of you, before the break, you mentioned how you used to read a lot of male authors and some of their descriptions were well, now, upon reflection, you realize they were problematic. But back then, when you did read it, did that kind of affect the way that you viewed yourself or the way that you thought you needed to present yourself to the world?
Absolutely. As a teenager, as a preteen, as we said earlier, I started reading very young. So there were times when I would look at myself and there are all these descriptors and you imagine that that's what you should look like.
Like the Wakefield twins.
Like the Wakefield twins, or that you should have waved hair, or you should walk a certain way. I remember descriptions like, you know, full lips or fluttering eyelashes and you know, it sounds ridiculous, but as a teenager, and because books are so personal, right? Like you read them and they imprint in your psyche so fast, they sort of became this a prism through which you viewed yourself. Mm-hmm. And so definitely I thought this was the way, and perhaps it's true, that this was the way that the majority of the world looked at me as well.
I think that happens a lot in teen writing as much as anything else. In the young adult writing that was available to us when we were growing up, I think it's a genre that's grown in leaps and bounds. You know, I still read young adult fiction now simply because I think out of a sense of loss that I didn't really have it when I was a young adult and could have used it. But I'm thinking of things like, again, R.L. Stine, Christopher Pike, because I read those to supplement the saccharine sweetness of Sweet Valley High. And the descriptions of the teenage girls, by all measures, you know, I would be the unpopular girl. Yeah. As a teenager growing up, you know, because...
You were the nerd reader.
I was the nerd reader. I was snarky, you know, like, and more importantly, my physical description didn't fit any members of the people who would be sitting at the popular table. And I think it's not helped by the fact that... So, for example, prom, or rather whatever we call our graduation thing here, which is not prom, you know, it achieved this sort of mythical status for me. Yep. You know, it became a huge thing. It became the night that if you are a loved girl, if you are secretly popular, and again, that very insidious theory, that very insidious notion that perhaps, you know, you just don't see yourself. Because male authors, for some reason, love female authors who don't, female authors,
who
female
don't
characters.
Who don't know that they're beautiful.
Who don't know that they're beautiful and don't know that they're smart and don't know anything, really, but they are all these things. And
it's only kind of justified when a man sees it?
It's justified when a man tells her, it's that moment on the balcony where you brush the lock of hair and you go, "You're beautiful." Yeah. And she goes, "Ah!" That feeling.
And doesn't that line up with that horrible dating manual that man wrote a couple of years ago? There was this...
The Game?
The Game, where he says, don't go for the beautiful girl in the group. Go for the second most beautiful girl because she doesn't realize. And you are the one who will tell her she's beautiful and therefore you'll get her more easily.
Plus the beautiful one gets jealous and therefore... Yeah, it's horrendous. I was reading an article recently, which was a review of, I think, 50 female characters in movies. So it was how they were introduced in screenplays. And across the board, none of them were too beautiful. And it was explicit in the description. Beautiful, but doesn't know it. Beautiful, but not intimidatingly so. Beautiful, but... And it's ridiculous because, again, firstly, it feeds the notion that you cannot know yourself. If you know yourself too well and you're too self-assured, nobody likes that.
And that's a fault.
And that's a fault, because then what can men talk to you about? And then...
How can they define you then?
If you've already defined yourself, you crazy woman, don't you know how the world works? And then the other problem was that they were, by and large, describing women who would then go on to be played by otherworldly beautiful actresses. So that's, again... What is that even? You know, Julia Roberts in My Best Friend's Wedding was described as sort of rumpled, you know, like she sort of just rolled out of bed looking a bit. And I'm like, it's Julia Roberts. I mean, let's not kid ourselves here. So there is this sort of strange thing about beautiful, but not too much. Don't be too much.
Was this the same list that also included Lisbeth Salander from Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, where they said a character that is supposedly promoted or, oh, look, this is an enlightened, liberal, modern sort of female character. She's strong and she takes charge of her destiny. But in the descriptor, it's still, the physical appearance is still important. It's still played by someone like Rooney Mara and not just anyone who could adequately portray a strong woman who has her own mind.
I guess that's because maybe, you know, femininity and even masculinity, for that matter, they're all cultural constructs, right?
Absolutely. But that actually begs a question that I've been thinking about a lot ever since this How Would a Male Author Describe You came about, which is, do we not describe men in sexual terms in books? And of course we do. Not we, but, you know, female authors do describe men in sexual terms, especially in things like romance novels or teen books. And what is the difference?
So for me, I think the main difference, and let's exclude the romance novels, because again, those are for the time being, because they're primarily written by women for women, broadly speaking. But if we come back to that point about male writers writing sexy male characters, women are sexy just because of their bodies. Mm-hmm. By and large, you know, a woman shows up, she's curvy, she's not too curvy, she's short, but not too short. You know, she's all these things, and you're immediately supposed to recognize that in looking at her, the male character is interested in sleeping with her. Mm-hmm. The male character usually gains sex appeal and his virility by being really good at something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, he's... Let's just... You know what? While we're here, let's talk about Dan Brown. Let's talk about Robert Langdon, because that is a man who is one of the few, I think, very, very well-described male mm-hmm. characters, because, to borrow Shyamala's phrase, proxy. So, I mean, it's pretty open. Yes. Like, I don't think anybody is pretending that Dan Brown is not Robert Langdon at this point. But he is described in as really smart and really whatever, but also athletic. I mean, he makes a point of telling you how many laps the guy swims. Mm-hmm. And that's in the description. It's almost like a rote description. It's like, Harry Potter has a lightning-shaped scar. Robert Langdon swims 10 laps. It's part of the same kind of, you know, thing. And it, again, like, male characters are allowed to be smart first and therefore sexy, whereas female characters are sexy often, not always, sexy and then surprisingly smart. And that's kind of the I think that's that tends to be how it works.
No, I agree. I think, and also, of course, we can't pretend that books and movies exist in a vacuum, right? So while some of the reactions that have come about to this is, as if female authors don't describe men in the exact same way. They well might, but I also think that there's a power dynamic that exists outside of these books and are often reflected in the worlds of these books that obviously reflect the power dynamic that exists between these characters. So for a man to view a woman a certain way and a woman to view a man in a certain way, we don't yet exist in a frame where everything is equal. If all else was equal, then we could say, yes, it's wrong to objectify both men and women. And it is wrong. But within the space of these books, we're overwhelmingly only getting one sort of objectification, if I may say, and not the other, which I think argues for what these kind of campaigns bring about, which is not so much let's stop reading these writers, but it's that we should have more people being given access to things like publishing and filmmaking so that we have more writers, not just female writers, but female writers of different ethnicities, female writers of different sexualities, male writers of different sexualities, ethnicities, so that we get a multiplicity of representation. So yes, we have the lone male, traveler whose women flit in and out of his life, but possibly we could also get other ways in which women are represented so that 12-year-old girls don't only read about, you know, backsides in jeans or cherry red lips.
Earlier, I think Shyamala mentioned Rainbow Rowell's Eleanor and Park, which is one of my favorite books, I think, of the last 10 years. It's so beautiful. But I just wanted to mention it in terms of how to write about the physicality of characters without objectifying them, because it's a teenage love story. When teenagers fall in love, the body is involved. You know, at that age, it's not always about the mind, you know, and both characters, and it's told from both points of view, both characters speak or think and dwell often on the body of the other, not in a gross way, but in a way that kind of picks up on all the little things that we do love about the people that we love, you know, the way that they dress, the way that they move through the world, the way that they carry themselves. And that is represented in the description of the body. Mm-hmm. And that happens across, both characters. Eleanor is a big-boned, red-haired girl who dresses funny because she can't afford, non-secondhand clothes because she comes from a poor family. Park is, as you'd expect from an Asian guy growing up in America, kind of small-boned, smaller, fine. And I know this because the author described them so well and repeatedly through the book. And at no point did I think, hey, stop objectifying Asian men or, so it's not about that. I think people tend to have a very knee-jerk political correctness gone mad, what, I can't describe women anymore. Mm-hmm. You can describe women, just do it well, you know, and do it because it feeds the story or because it matters. Don't do it because you have this hot bombshell in your head and you're just dying to get her out on the page so that you can further exploit her, which is how it sometimes feels.
And doesn't that come back to the root of it all, that at the end of the day, to be a good writer or to be a good filmmaker, whatever you do, should be within to the service of the story. So if you're describing someone's body or their appearance, it should be because there's a point to it within that story and not because you're reliving some idealized fantasy that you might have or that you think your male readers might have, because then you're not actually doing your job well at all.
So I guess, what would you like to see happening? I mean, do you think more women writers would change this? Do you think, you know, that men just need to be more woke to steal that famous, you know, phrase? You know, what would you like to see happen?
I would. One thing is, as I said earlier, is just to read more diverse books. You know, and there's so many campaigns and voices calling for this already. We're certainly not there yet. But I think that that's one answer. To look for our literary fix, if you know, for lack of a better word, not just from America, which I think, you know, from both our conversations, it's very clear that, you know, especially for our generation, we grew up very much with that idea of that American teenage and then sort of growing up influence. But now we have access to books from all over the world with people of all appearances and all experiences. So not just from a publishing perspective, but as parents, as teachers, to expose kids and even other adults to works that are not just necessarily Western, American, British. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I think overall for male authors specifically, maybe to start thinking of their characters or starting to get to know women, not just as women, but as people. Mm-hmm. The way they get to know other men, the way they get to know anybody else, and to think of them not just in terms of what function they serve for them, but as who they are.
I agree with all of that. And I would just say that speaking, I think, as part of a room of young readers, people who started young and not saying we were misguided necessarily, just that really, I didn't notice even the fact that I wasn't reading a lot of female authors until I was shamefully old, I think. I spent really the bulk of my teenage years reading men. And that's fine. I'm not dismissing those male authors. They were very important to me. Many of my favorite authors are still male, but I've also gained a lot of new insight, new ways of looking at the world, new stories by reading female-led stories, female-written stories. Mm-hmm. And I think that as really, A, get your children reading young, it's not a bad thing, but also if you are going to do that, then maybe ensuring that diversity from a young age, so that looking for local authors, you know, authors from closer to home, authors of color, is something that is a habit mm-hmm. and sort of something that you do naturally, rather than something that I had a muscle I had to exercise at when I hit 23. You know, suddenly it's like, oh,
exactly,
damn, you know, I need to kind of rejig my library. And that was a conscious decision on my part. And it's hard because you have to shift your reading. You have to shift what you expect from a book as well. Reading a female author is often a different experience to reading a male author. Mm-hmm. And that is a good thing. It's a valuable thing. But it's not something that you should feel uncomfortable doing later. You know, it's just get going early.
And if you had to make just one recommendation of a book to read, what would that be? With, I suppose, you know, with equal representation or a nice, well-rounded description of the characters. You did mention a few, but any maybe from a female author that you can think of?
I'm going to recommend an author and not a book.
Sure.
Nnedi Okorafor. She's an African fantasy writer. And the reason I'm recommending her, I've been reading a lot of her work of late, but I really like the way she brings her her life experience as a woman from the African continent, but also weaves in African mythology into her fantasy novels. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's exciting in all the ways that a good fantasy, she writes both series and standalone books. Her works are exciting in the way, you know, any stellar fantasy is, but then it feels different and invigorating because of the fact that you're reading about these elements that you've never read anywhere before. So I think that's a good start.
Okay, and Lynn?
Well, I didn't expect for us to both be recommending African authors, but I'm just going to go with the one that I read most recently and that I've been living with, you know, because it's really stuck with me even after. And it's Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's Americana, mm-hmm. Which is, again, a love story written by a woman, told from both perspectives. And for, again, just to kind of get ahead of that whole political correctness thing. She, the character in the book, is beautiful and is sexually desirable. That's very clear. But she's never described as such. You know that because of the way people react to her, which is how it should be when you are the hero of your own story. So, yeah, Americana. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you so much, ladies. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Feminist Fridays interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, which is available on Google Play and the App Store. I've been speaking to Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Gunnison, and this has been Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.